Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. The world is burning. Obama the meddler has set the world on fire. And, of course, instead of talking about Libya or Egypt or Iran, he talks about gay marriage. Once again, we see we have a man in the White House who is out of touch with reality. And we have an electorate that doesn't even understand the danger that we are in. The big topic, of course, is what's going to happen next. Everyone's asking, how far does this go? We understand this is not really a democracy movement. We understand this is a tumultuous movement of humans that may yield unintended consequences. And we know what's going to happen. We know what the consequences are going to be. I predicted the Muslim Brotherhood would take over Egypt, and I was right. We know who's going to take over Libya. We know who's going to take over in every country where the dictators, so-called, are overthrown. Far worse will occur. As we say, the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know. And the question is, why did Soros and Brzezinski and the Carter minions, in other words, and Obama do this? Did they do this intentionally? Did they want the world to burn? Or is it done strictly through foolishness and stupidity? We don't have the answer to that question, but I have one thing that I can tell you for sure. We can't prove it yet, but I can guarantee you people have made billions of dollars on this turmoil. Billions of dollars are being made every day on the turmoil, either it is through oil futures, either selling short or selling long, and other commodities, by the way. And if we had any access to the hedge funds that are run by some of the supporters of Obama, you can pretty much figure this all out. Now you say, come on, that's a stretch, Savage. There's no such corruption in the United States of America. We're not a banana republic. Well, here's an article that came out today. Top SEC lawyer and his brothers inherited $1.5 million in Madoff profits. The top lawyer in the United States, the top lawyer at the SEC and his two brothers inherited more than $1.5 million in phony profits from their mother's investment in Bernie Madoff's epic Ponzi scheme. This is while he was SEC general counsel and senior policy director. He was named SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, General Counsel and Senior Policy Director less than 2 months after Madoff's arrest in December of 08. And so, ladies and gentlemen, if we have this kind of corruption here in the United States of America, what do you think it is at a higher level than this? This is a big deal. This is a very big deal. And, of course, we can't prove anything, as you well know. I also want to talk about the Somali pirates. You know my feelings on this. It's common sense. It's logical. People are saying, well, we don't know who to attack. After all, Somalia is gone. It's a lawless government. We don't know who to bomb or who to attack. Why, there's nothing we can do but wring our hands and let them cut the throats of Americans and seize tankers and go back and live like pimps in Somalia. Now, you want me to tell you, the U.S. Navy was created for a reason, and it was not to become a floating laboratory for social engineers. The U.S. Navy right now is little more than a social laboratory for liberals. And therefore, I want something for my money. How about you? I'd like the U.S. Navy to be used for what it's best at, which is killing evil doers around the world and subduing those who want to destroy my way of life. We know where they live. Somali pirates generally coordinate themselves out of one particular town. And then after collecting their ransom, which is going between $300,000 and $1.5 million, if you go and look at the towns that these pirates go back to. The coastal region, for example, of Puntland in Somalia is booming. Fancy houses are being built. Mercedes are being bought. All of this in a country that has not had a functional central government for nearly 20 years. So after the pirates hold up ships and kill people, what happens? They go back and they live like pimps in Somalia. Well, boys and girls of the Savage Nation, that is what the U.S. Marines were built to do. They were built to kill the pirates. They were built to kill the pirates. I'll use the word over and over again. They were built to kill the pirates. That is what they were made for. That's what they're trained for. That's what the ammunition is designed for. There is no reason that we cannot, if we had a commander-in-chief who was interested in something other than gay marriage, there's no reason in the world that he couldn't order 10,000 airborne troops over this pimp town in Somalia and have 10,000 troops cordon off the town and capture the pirates and bring them to justice at the tip of a rifle. But we don't have that kind of leader, do we? We don't have a commander-in-chief. The question is, what are we going to do in a country like this where the area of Puntland, where pirates made about $30 million from ransom payments last year alone, which is far more than the annual budget of the entire country, of the entire region, when the president of this area, Puntland, Adi Massa, was asked about the reported wealth of pirates and their associates, he said, it's more than true. These 21st century pirates in Somalia are now buying more sophisticated weapons and speedboats, which means that unless we use the U.S. Navy and the U.S. Air Force and the U.S. Marines to stop them, they will continue to plunder the busy shipping lanes through the Gulf of Aden. They are now even targeting ships carrying aid to feed their compatriots. Up to a third of the population is starving. You know that there are warships from France, Canada, and Malaysia, amongst others, now patrolling, but they're doing nothing. They're patrolling the Somali coast to try and fend off the pirate attacks. And I say that's stupid. There's no leadership. There's idiots in the Admiralty if that's the best they're doing. If the best the Navy could figure out is to go look for the motherships, they should all be fired. Sack them all right now and get a leader in the Navy who says, wait a minute, what do you mean you're looking for the ships and the pirate speedboats? Go to the town where the pimps are driving the Mercedes after they've gotten the ransom. What are you going out to sea for and looking for them? The pimps all go home and they all buy Mercedes and build big houses. That's where they are. They're living like they are, like what they are. I mean, I don't understand this country anymore. So if you want to talk about what to do to Somalia's pirates, or if you want to talk about other topics, Wisconsin is, you know, you want, what are you going to say about that? Which side you're on? You know which side I'm on. I'm on the side of reason and fairness. The teachers have a moderate salary, you know, $105,000 a year with benefits is a very moderate salary. I mean, you ask any teacher in Wisconsin, they're starving to death. And they could all do much better in the private sector. You know that. That's the standard government worker line. Well, we take less money because, well, we could always go to work in the private sector. I used to hear that from the university liars. There are no jobs in the private sector. They're unemployable. They ought to be glad that they have a job. I told you what I think the governor should do, and I think he's starting to do it. He's given them notice. If they're not back by next week, he's going to start issuing layoff notice. I would encourage the governor of that state to do something else. If the Democrats, who are not in a session by tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., do not return, they're fired, and he's going to hold special elections in every one of their districts. That's it. You're fired. You have a job. These Democrats are such swine in this country. From the top to the bottom, it's the swinish party. It's the party of swine. When they had absolute power, they were glad to show up for work. And now that they're in the minority, they don't even want to vote. Can you believe the country you're living in? I would say that what they're doing is illegal. They're abrogating their responsibilities as a legislator, so therefore fire them. You're not doing your job. You're not showing up. You're fired. We're holding a special election. Have a nice day. Move to Somalia if that's the kind of government you want. 1-800-449-8255. And now to top it all off, we learn that Al-Qaeda has set up an Islamic emirate in a portion of Libya. That's right. An Islamic emirate is being set up in a portion of Libya. On the doorstep of Italy, on the doorstep of Europe. You hear this? Radical Islam is now only a few hundred kilometers away from the European Union's front door, and nothing is being done by the impotent UN, the useless EU, and of course the equally useless U.S. Commander-in-Chief, who is now acting like an EU bureaucrat. If you'd like to comment on these or other topics, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. But before we take our first break, this would not be complete unless I played the sound of an out-of-state agitator who has no business in Wisconsin, but he's well-known for this. Jesse Jackson, the out-of-state agitator, comes into Madison, Wisconsin, and he likens demonstrations to what happened in Cairo. Listen to the double talk coming out of Marble Mouth in 25.
What do you think about them calling this Cairo?
Well, it's the same spirit. I mean, it's a massive, non-violent, disciplined response to economic insecurity. And that is what is beautiful about Cairo, is that it was a nonviolent, disciplined struggle fighting tyranny.
Right, turn it off. Cairo was nonviolent, according to Jesse Jackson. Anyone listening to the show believe a word Jesse Jackson has ever said? Answer no. Does anyone listening to the show believe Jesse Jackson is not an outside agitator? Don't call me, because I believe he's an outside agitator. And not one word that comes out of his mouth is a word that should be listened to. But to call it what went on in Egypt as nonviolent is beyond begging the question. It's insanity to believe anybody would believe that. And to say that they're rioting in Wisconsin over economic uncertainty is ludicrous. The average salary for teachers is $105,000 in benefits. There's no economic uncertainty. They're living like pigs on a farm, and they don't want to give up the mud they're rolling in. I'll be right back. So the pirates, as you well know, are the scourge of the seas right now, and they all go back to a certain town. We know the town, and most of these pirate pimps come from the same clan. The pirate pimps all come from the Majeerteen clan of the president of Somalia's transitional federal government, Abdullah Yusuf. And the pirate pimps all come from the coastal region of Puntland. The pirate pimps go back, and they're building big houses. They're buying expensive cars. In fact, this town where the pirate pimps live is a safe haven where almost nothing is being done to stop the pirate pimps. The fact of the matter is they have links to the town itself. And we have the strongest military on earth with the weakest commander-in-chief in history. How's that? The strongest military in the world's history with the weakest commander-in-chief. Does that work for you? It works for me, because I'll be very honest with you. If it was my call, I would put a call out to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. The usher I wouldn't call. Wouldn't call the chairman, the usher, the PR man. I would get the head of the U.S. Marine Corps. I get the head of the Army. No, I wouldn't get him either. He let the Fort Hood massacre occur without even saying the word Islam or Muslim, sorry. Well, I guess you'd have to go a little further down the chain of command to talk to anybody. I don't know how far you'd have to go today to get any kind of response. That's the problem. You see, they purged the military at the upper echelon, upper echelons of all the service branches. They have purged the military of anyone with any conservative credentials. Anyone who has actual desire to kill the terrorists have been purged out of the military. For example, Colonel West, he personally told me that after interrogating an Al-Qaeda member and shooting a gun off near his ear, the guy broke down and cried like a baby and gave up all the information of where the bombs were hidden, and he saved men in his company. For that, he was prosecuted and almost was put away for almost 8 years because he did his job, incidentally. I don't know if you know that story. And so, therefore, it's very hard to know who to go to. But let's say we still had some chain of command with someone willing to order the troops to kill. You say we need 10,000 airborne troops, and you get 10,000 airborne troops. You fly them into Pimp Town, you drop them over Pimp Town, and they cordon off Pimp Town in Somalia, and then they go in and they do what Marines, what the paratroopers are trained to do. You assault the town and you take the pimps hostage, and then you bring them to Guantanamo or to Berkeley, California. You could release them in the streets of Berkeley, since they were interested in granting asylum to those released from Gitmo. So the pirates that you capture, you could then release to Berkeley, California, or Gitmo. Give the good liberals a choice of their own backyard or Gitmo. I think you pretty much know what will happen. 1-800-449-8255. We know the town. Shall I repeat it again in case you missed it? By the way, this is not NPR. You're not listening to government-sponsored radio. You're listening to one man's opinion. It's an independent mind. Mine. It's one man's opinion. So we're talking about the pirates who, after they kill, after they murder, after they hijack, they rush back to the port of EYL, where most of the hijacked ships are kept by the well-armed private pimps. And then the people put on ties and suits, and they arrive in land cruisers with their laptops. One is an accountant for the pirate pimps. Another is says he's the chief negotiator for the pirate pimps. And we have a military that does absolutely nothing but practice social engineering instead of doing its job. I am sick and tired of paying trillions of dollars to a military that's been neutralized by the weakest commander-in-chief in the history of the United States of America. That's one opinion. What is your opinion? Why are we weak on pirates? Is somebody in our government getting a kickback? Is that the problem? Is money flowing back? Have they bought our politicians? Are they kicking money back up to the leadership in some way? Would we ever know that? They're not stupid after all. Look how far they've gotten. Taking on the biggest military in the world, it won't fire a shot by now. Yeah, for 4 days, the military trailed the yacht last week. 4 days, the U.S. military trailed the yacht. And then they killed all of the poor old people over 60, the pirate pimps. And yet you have people in this country who are calling them heroes and Robin Hoods. You have leftist scum who are calling them Robin Hoods. Can you believe this? All right, what do you want to talk about? This is your show in a certain way. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. We have many different topics. Fire the Congress, the senators, the state the Democrats. Fire them. The governor has the power to fire them, saying you've left the state, you're not doing your job, you're fired. That's it. You're in by tomorrow, 9 a.m., you're fired. And we're holding a special election in your district for Democrats only by next Tuesday. That's all. Special polls. Goodbye. Have a walk. And we're canceling your pensions, by the way. I can guarantee you the Democrats will be back at their desks tomorrow morning. So let's go to the callers. How about that? New York, Kevin, you're on the Savage Nation. Fire away.
Yeah, hey, Michael. I just want to say that this whole thing started back in 2009 when Obama stayed silent when the Iranian kids got up. Now, that was the silence came from what's happening now also. He didn't want to admit, he couldn't bring himself to admit that the seeds that Bush had planted were starting to grow. So now
you're jumping from Obama's complicity in what's going on in the Middle East with George Bush. You're saying George Bush is the genius behind the uprisings, and this is a democracy that you see arising in Egypt? You mean the Muslim Brotherhood is a democracy all of a sudden?
Yes, absolutely. If you
whoa. The Muslim Brotherhood wants to introduce Sharia law. That's your idea of democracy? Hello? Is there a brain on the other side of this microphone? So we have the most powerful military in history with the weakest commander-in-chief to go along with it. Welcome to the Savage Nation. We are talking about the pirates from Somalia who, after getting their ransom, are living like pimps in the hood. And they're buying big houses, building big houses, driving expensive cars. They've even built a restaurant to prepare food for the crews of the hijacked ships. The town is called EYL. They all come from a certain area. Common sense would dictate that we send in 10,000 paratroopers, seal off the town, and then take the town, kill or capture the pirates from that town, and either bring them back to Guantanamo, or if the liberals scream, then you can deposit them in sanctuary cities. You can bring them to San Francisco. You can give them 1,000 of the pirates. You give Berkeley 2,000-3,000, Austin, Texas, another 1,000. You can give, whenever there's a sanctuary city where all the libs love to have a sanctuary city for illegal aliens, give them the pirates. That's what I say. Pete in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
You know, I think that they acted with, the Navy acted with a little bit of restraint, maybe too much restraint. They did half a good job. They gutted one of the guys. They killed two of the other guys. The problem was that they arrested them, and now they're giving them 3 square meals.
No. You're looking at it from the wrong point of view. You're just following the news. You're not thinking. There's no strategic thinking in what you just said. I am saying that going after the pirates at sea is the wrong way to approach this problem. That is like arresting drug dealers instead of going into the areas where the drugs are being grown and burning the drugs to the ground. You've got to go to the town where the pirates are coming from. Don't you think that makes sense?
I agree with that, but what about this specific incident?
Well, this is another situation. There was very little. Once they got the four people, there was very little the Navy could do. What are they going to do, sink the ship and kill them anyway? Well, once the pirates get the tanker, once the pirates get a yacht, it's all over already. They win. They have all the power. You got to stop the plundering the way the military was set up to do, the way the Navy was set up. I told you over and over again what the Marines were set up to do. They were set up to kill pirates. That was the origin of the U.S. Navy. Was to go after pirates. Marines were created specifically to kill the pirates. Now, You can either do it at sea, which is the unintelligent place to meet them, or meet them in their hometown. You understand? Well, no one wants to even talk about it. Piracy is going to continue to plague the world from Somalia, not as long as the violence and chaos continues on the land. It's as long as the U.S. military is run by the weakest commander-in-chief in the world. That's how long it will go on. Until we get a real rock-ribbed conservative in the White House, hopefully an ex-military man, we're going to be victims, really, at the hands of Muslim pirates and those who want to impose Sharia law in the United States of America, acting as though they're our friends. But once we get a rock-ribbed right-winger running this country again, if it ever could happen, and I think it can happen, then the world will be safe for democracy. Until then, the world is safe for Sharia law. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Any other topic you want to talk about? Houston, Joanna, you're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, I think political correctness has just warped the minds of our military leaders. If you were to take military people from 40 or 50 years ago and bring them back today, they wouldn't recognize what they're seeing. And I think the reason why they don't go in stronger is because they're worried so much about the backlash, they forget about their primary job.
Well, Johnny, you're 100% right. Look what they did with Major Nidal Hassan, the Muslim. He was signaling that he was going to kill. He was signing his letters in the army with Allah be great or something like that, Allah Akbar. Every letter he wrote for the army, he was signing that way. Everyone knew he was a powder keg about to explode. And they all said they were afraid to do it for fear of agitating Muslim pressure groups. So what chance do we have to defeat radical Islam if we have such cowards running the military? That's the real question.
To start with regulatory overhaul in this country, we spend, you know, we have the most sophisticated system of all of these laws, and they even want more and more in the current administration.
No, it's all about leadership. If we had a president who was a different man, let's put it to you that way, without spending any more time putting him down, he's making a mockery of the presidency itself. If we had a man who actually was a president in the White House, there could be a rational discussion about sending in 10,000 paratroopers to take the town in Somalia from whence the pirate pimps come. Why is that a bad idea? You know, it's not that the pirate pimps are taking the ransom money and feeding the poor. If the pirate pimps were feeding the poor with the money, they'd have a rational argument for their piracy to a certain extent. But then the pimps are not feeding the poor. They're buying Mercedes. They're building mansions. They're living just the way any purveyor of prostitution lives in anywhere in the world. You understand that?
And now they're killing Americans because they're not concerned. But, Michael, I just wanted to say that part of the reason I think why people are so fascinated to tune in and listen to you is that you bring a perspective that is kind of like what we used to have in this country before all this thinking got tainted. And I think people are...
Well, I'm kind of a throwback. You want to put it to that way. I think the way men thought 50 years ago. I admit it. I purposely admit it. I mean, I pointedly admit it. I'm not ashamed of it. Somehow, I've not lost my ability to think. I've not yet, let us say, fallen into groupthink. And I think that what I express on the show is what a lot of millions and millions of people think today. Only they're either unable to even think it anymore. Or they're afraid to say it, but I have to say it because otherwise we're finished. We're doomed as a nation. When you have the strongest military on earth, commanded by the weakest commander-in-chief in history, that is why you see these plagues arising around the world. The plague of piracy, the plague of radical Islam, the plague of political correctness, even within the United States of America in the military with Major Nidal Hassan signaling what he was going to do and then doing it. You know, he's not yet been brought to trial. Do you know that? That the man behind the Fort Hood massacre has not yet been brought to trial. Are you aware of that? So there it is. Well, I think we've talked about that. Maria in Hawaii, thanks for listening. You're up on the Savage Nation.
Yes, my question is, why does he have the military? What is the military for? What are they training for now?
I don't know. I have no idea what they're good for anymore. Well, where do the trillions of dollars go, I keep asking myself. The reason I'm obsessed with watching military history is because it's all about World War II battles where the military was led by brave men with a clear purpose, and I know who won. And I know the evil ones lost. You understand? And then I look around today, and all I see are PR agents in military uniforms running everything.
I do not have any
faith in the leadership of the U.S. military. No, I do not. Not when I see pirates getting away with murder. I have no faith whatsoever in Admiral Mullen. Admiral Mullen, the good ship Lollipop. The good ship Lollipop under Admiral Mullen. 1-800-449-8255. You know, there's another silence here that I don't think anyone in radio has talked about. I got to admit, I don't listen to the radio when I'm off the air. For two reasons. I've told you this years ago. One of the reasons I can still think independently is I never listen to anyone else on the air, because you start to subconsciously copy them. Now, if you think that you've heard what I'm saying before, it's because there are people copying me. Everyone in the business listens to me, and that's the way it is. If you're the lead dog on the dog sled pulling the sled, everyone else looks at your behind. That's an old saying. In other words, if you're the lead dog, everyone's looking at your tail. Let's put it to you that way. So if what you think, what I'm saying sounds somewhat familiar, is because everyone listens to, I don't listen to them. But there's a silence, and I don't know if anyone has said this yet, about the Middle East fires that were set by Brzezinski, Carter, Obama, et al. And the silence is very interesting. The Arabs rioting in these countries, do you notice there's almost no anti-Zionism in any of their rioting? They no longer have the Jews to blame. Have you noticed that the riots have nothing to do with Jews or Israel? Now, it is true when the peace-loving Egyptians, because Jesse Jackson said it was peaceful, mutilated, assaulted, and raped the female reporter. They called her a Jew and an Israeli. But you don't want to know that. It makes you uncomfortable to realize that Hitler is alive and well in the Arab world. You don't want to understand that Hitler is alive and well. You don't want to know anything about the alliance in World War II between the Grand Mufti and the Nazis. You don't want to know that the Nazi movement and the Islamic caliphate that was at that time pretty powerful were brothers in arms against the West. You don't want to know any of that. You want to live in a dream world. But you see, I don't live in a dream world. I live in the real world. And I see Hitler everywhere I turn in the Middle East. Little Hitlers, big Hitlers, it doesn't matter. But Hitler is alive and well. But even having said that, very, very little of these riots in these countries has to do with Israel. You see, for 50, 60, 70 years now, the dictators in the Middle East have stirred up the dumb masses in the Arab street. How many years now have we heard what the Arab street thinks? Do you give a damn what the Arab street thinks? Do you actually, you remember how long the media has been telling, well, the Arab street thinks this about us, the Arab street thinks that's about, what care? I used to go crazy when I heard that. They ought to worry about what the American street thinks of them. I should care what an uneducated fifth century mind thinks about my country, I would say to myself over and over again. But now that we see the rabble in the streets of the Arab rabble rioting all over the Middle East, it's strange that they're rioting over jobs and food prices, not over Zionism and Israel. Isn't that interesting? This whole conflagration going on, the entire Holocaust that's emerging in the Middle East, now that's a directly positive word that I'm using when I say it's a correct word, rather. The word is absolutely correct when I said Holocaust. For those of you who know what words mean, the word Holocaust means burning by fire, incidentally. It has another deeper meaning for some, of course. But when I use the word Holocaust, that is a correct term for what's going on in the Middle East. The Holocaust that is occurring in the Middle East right now has very little, if anything, to do with Israel. You don't hear it. You don't see it. That's because the demagogues who are being thrown out like Gaddafi, etc., are no longer stirring up the masses saying, oh, the Jews did it to you. The reason you're starving, the Jews did it. The reason you don't have a job, the Jews did it, while he was living like a big fat pimp up there in Libya, right? And the idiots were listening to him for years. They believed him because they had a scapegoat the way Hitler had the scapegoat. But you notice now with these the people rising up, all they want is really lower food prices and a better job. It has nothing to do with Israel. The question is how long this will go on in this matter, and the answer is not too long, because soon the fascists in the Muslim Brotherhood, the Islamo-fascists in the MB, are going to take the masses and blame the Jews for it again. The same old storyline, the same one that Hitler used to stir up the Germans. And then we're going to see what happens, because Israel's not going to disappear just because they want it to disappear. Let's be very clear about it. Of course, Israel can't take on the entire world on their own, nor should they. And it's a question of whether or which nations would join Israel to suppress the rising caliphate or the Islamic fascist caliphate, whichever way you prefer to express it. Chicago, Roger, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Michael, thank you for taking my call. A couple of things. I think we should take a lesson from the Jews when they had hostages in Entebbe. They sent in a bunch of their commandos, broke out the hostages, and took care of it.
Well, now let's go back to that. That was a great raid on Entebbe. It was another time. It was conducted by Benjamin Netanyahu's brother. You know that, who died in that commando raid. You're aware of that?
What's that? I didn't hear you, Mike.
Okay, I don't want to repeat myself. Thanks for the call. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. The seditious group CARE, in my opinion, seditious, along with the seditious anti-American ACLU, has filed a lawsuit against the FBI. The FBI has been sued by the ACLU, the seditious ACLU. Their assets should be seized, in my opinion, and their management deported from America, along with CARE. As you well know, it's an unindicted co-conspirator of a terrorist group. CARE is a very dangerous organization. I've been involved in a lawsuit with them. I was targeted by them for speaking out about them long before anybody else has. But right now, this fifth column group, CARE, and the seditious ACLU is actually suing our FBI, saying that the FBI violated Muslims' freedom of religion. Did you know about this? Now, why are they saying that they violated the freedom of religion when they didn't stop them from practicing their religion? Because that's what they do. That's what spiders do. An FBI informant who infiltrated a California mosque violated the constitutional rights of hundreds of Muslims by targeting them for surveillance because of their religion. So says the ACLU and CARE. So they filed a suit against seven of its agents and supervisors, etc., and so on. And so, therefore, let me explain how this works from the point of view of an immune system in the human body. The human body, of which I know something about, back in 83, 84, I wrote a book called Maximum Immunity. I know the rudiments of the immune system. Fair enough. It's in six languages. As you well know, we have, in simple terms, an internal defense force. Think of them as white blood cells. That's one of several different internal defense cells that we have that fight off invaders, correct? So in other words, when germs invade our body, which happens all day long, our white cells, macrophages, and other elements of our immune system attack the invaders and kill them. They quench them, dissolve them, and kill them, and that's how we survive. That's how we avoid dying. That's how we avoid cancer. Right now, our body politic has some internal defense cells called the FBI, called the good parts of Homeland Security, the good portions of law enforcement. They are our defense cells, our internal defense cells, correct? When you have an autoimmune disease in a human body, the defense cells attack themselves in some cases, and they're no longer able to defend the body, and the person gets a major illness and dies. Right now, what we have with a lawsuit like this is the equivalent of an autoimmune disease. We have our own constitution being used against our freedoms by the ACLU, which to me, again, if we had a real commander-in-chief, a real president, I would say, you know, in a time of terror, enough is enough with you vermin. We're going to now investigate the ACLU and its funding. And if we find what we think we're going to find, we're going to indict all of you. All of your leadership of the ACLU is going to be indicted for sedition. And if we find that you did receive foreign funding, as we suspect you have been all of these years, we're going to seize your assets and we're going to jail all of you. That's how you fight this kind of situation. You don't sit there and then defend yourself if you're the FBI. That's all. D in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation.
I listen day to day to day to your show, and I just have to say, why, does every male who calls your show sound like a spineless, pathetic, castrated individual who is unable to shed blood if necessary? I'm the mother of three children, And I listen every day to what I believe are men who are conservative, who fully understand the aspect and fully understand the scope of what it is we are dealing with. Why are you so spineless? Why are you so weak? Why are you unable to slice the throat, if necessary, of an intruder that comes into your home? Why would you even call 911? What is the problem here in our country where conservative men call in?
You mean when I say to them that we should go to Somalia and send in 10,000 airborne troops, surround the town, and then capture and kill all of the pirates and bring them back either to Guantanamo or sanctuary cities? You mean why don't we hear more of this coming out of the government?
Yeah, but I have a better idea for that solution. Why don't we use a dirty bomb? Why don't we plant
Well,
one?
We don't have to go to a dirty bomb and kill everyone in the town, because there's no need to kill everyone in Somalia, in that Somalian town, in order to capture the pirates. They know who they are. They're the pimps driving around in the fancy cars and building the big houses and driving around like any other pimp in any other part of the world. That's all. They're pretty visible. Everyone knows who the pimps are.
Then we systematically go in and we kill them where they live. We do not...
Well, we don't kill them. That's what our military is paid to do. We are civilians. We don't kill. The military is paid to kill. Do you understand what they're trained and paid for? They're not trained to be a floating sanctuary for people who can't find jobs and to teach them how to have babies on the ship.
And this is my point.
I've been on ships. I can't believe what the U.S. Navy has become. You cannot believe what goes on ships today. You cannot believe it. Do you know that under Obama, they're going to build women's bathrooms now on submarines in order to make sure women can be on submarines? Take out the torpedoes and put in ladies' toilets.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I mean, we could talk about the Middle East till we're blue in the face, but as you well know, our commander-in-chief, the weakest in American history, has been silent for 9 days. 9 days, you haven't heard a word out of the man. Instead, he broke his silence today to talk about gay marriage, not about Libya, not about Egypt, not about Saudi Arabia, not about what he has set afire in the world, not the least of which he hasn't talked about the four dead Americans aboard the yacht, you know, old people in their 50s, 60s. According to a pirate, they were crying when they were captured. And they said, well, the pirates, as you well know, the left wing is saying that the reason they were killed was because they're handing out Bibles. That's, again, an example of the vermin in the media. Because although the Adams who were killed did hand out Bibles, a pirate told the AP today that the Bible giving had no factor whatsoever in their death. They said the pirates killed them after the U.S. forces blocked the yacht's path. Now, he said the hostages pleaded with us not to harm them or take them to dangerous places. They cried when we captured them and asked us to release them because they were too old and couldn't endure captivity. Now, the pimps in Somalia who are doing this are now total, absolute terrorist criminals. And they have now ramped up their game. They're now systematically torturing hostages, including locking them in freezers. And because the pirates have gotten away with virtual murder because of the weakness of the European Union and of America, they've gotten so fat on their winnings that they're amping it up now, and now they're loading on more ammo and more men to their ships after four U.S. deaths. In fact, this just came out. Pirates in Somalia said today they are ferrying ammunition and men to the 30 hijacked vessels still under their control, and they threatened to kill more captives following the violent end to a hostage standoff that left four Americans dead. There's only one answer. Is you don't send our military to the ships that they're holding. You don't do that. You go to the town that the pirates come from. Where's the strategic thinking from the commander-in-chief? They all come from the same clan. We know the town that they come from. The town is called EYL in Somalia. They even have special restaurants that have been set up to prepare food for the crews of the hijacked ships in this town. This town in Somalia is a safe haven where nothing is being done to stop the pirates. In fact, in this administration in that town, there's links to them. The pimps all come from the same clan. The pirate pimps all come from the Marjitan clan of the president of Somalia's transitional federal government, Abdullah Youssef. And what they're doing with the money is not feeding the poor. They're doing what pimps do everywhere with the winnings. The pimps are building palatial mansions. The pimps are buying expensive cars. The pimps are buying tailor-made suits with the money. They're even stealing the grain that's being sent to their own country to feed the poor. So don't buy the garbage from the left-wing fools that they're doing it to protect their fishing grounds, and they're doing it for the betterment of their poor, the poor in their city. That's not what they're doing it for. They're just criminals. Now you say, well, what can we do about that? Well, if we can't, if our military is incapable of going into this town and securing it, I mean, what do you need, 5,000 men? 10,000 airborne troops? 5,000? 10,000? You parachute them in off an aircraft carrier, off support ships. They're dropped by parachute. They surround the town, and then they go in, and they capture and kill the pirates. Those who fight, they kill. And those who don't fight, they capture. And then they bring them back either to Guantanamo or they bring them to the sanctuary cities like San Francisco and Berkeley and Austin, Texas, where they have such incredible compassion for the Islamo-fascist. And you release the captured pirates in Berkeley. You give them 2,000. You give San Francisco 4,000. You give Austin, Texas 10,000. However many captured pirates they want, they can have. And then you'll see what happens when the liberals have pirates living in their town. You'll see if they suddenly become a conservative overnight. But let's be focused and serious. The pirates are ramping up their attacks. They're adding ammo and men to the ships after the four U.S. hostages were killed, these elderly, beautiful people. What the heck are we sending the FBI and the Justice Department to investigate this? What? Do you actually think Eric Holder's Justice Department is capable of stopping piracy? Do you actually think the politically caponized FBI, which is afraid of its own shadow for fear of CARE and other groups, is going to do anything about what's going on with pirates? It's absurd. At least this is one man's opinion. I could be right. I could be wrong. More than likely, I'm right rather than wrong. But I'm open to discussion. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. And, of course, you understand the issue. There are other issues. I don't really want to talk about Wisconsin. I've given my opinion on it. I'll give it to you again. The governor is 100% right. The unions have gotten too fat. The public workers are doing much better than the private sector. He's trying to do what the voters put him in place to do, which is tighten the budget. The Democrats, being the cowards that they are and the anti-democratic individuals they actually are now that they have the minority position and not even going to show up for work, he has the power to fire them. He can say, you're not coming to work. You've been playing hooky. Either you're back by 9 a.m. tomorrow at your desk in the state capitol, or we're firing you. We're declaring you fired, and we're holding special elections next week in your district. Goodbye. And P.S., your pensions are gone. They'll be back. They'll come back from the gambling casinos in the surrounding states. And that's it. It's really simple. You do that. Same with the teachers. You'll be back at that desk tomorrow with the blackboard and the chalk, okay? Or you're fired, and we're putting in replacements. Goodbye. All the teachers are fired. You're out on strike with your fake sick notes. You're fired. Goodbye. There were consequences. Reagan did it with the air traffic controllers. Don't you remember? Remember that great time that everyone said, oh, he's so an evil man, Ronald Reagan. Remember the air traffic controllers thought they had us by the you-know-whats? Oh, we're going on strike. We'll cripple the airline. And then Reagan said, I'll tell you what. You're all fired. Goodbye. And guess what? The next day he had trainees or whatever, assistants in there. And the airplanes were still flying. They lost their jobs. There's only comes a point where you can only push so far. Fire the teachers, fire the Democrat legislators, and move on. That's what you were elected to do. You got to empower the governor. You want to hear Reagan? Listen to it. We have it.
This morning at 7 a.m., the union representing those who man America's air traffic control facilities called a strike. This was the culmination of 7 months of negotiations between the Federal Aviation Administration and the union. At one point in these negotiations, agreement was reached and signed by both sides, granting a $40 million increase in salaries and benefits. This is twice what other government employees can expect. It was granted in recognition of the difficulties inherent in the work these people perform. Now, however, the union demands are 17 times what had been agreed to. It is for this reason that I must tell those who fail to report for duty this morning, they are in violation of the law, and if they do not report for work within 48 hours, they have forfeited their jobs and will be terminated.
That's when we had a president named Reagan with the air traffic controllers, and you know the rest is history. Of course, that's what Governor Walker should do as of right now. He should not only fire the teachers if they don't return to work, he should fire the legislators who are hiding. I've never seen anything like this. He should declare that they've, you know, nullified their own seat and hold special elections. He has the power as governor. We're also talking about the pirates. We know that they are now heavily armed. They're holding, what, 30 ships now or more. They're sending out more ammunition and more armed groups, these terrorists from Somalia. And if you're going to go after the ships, they're just going to either kill all of the crews or blow the ships up, which certainly we don't want to do. So you go where they live. You go to the safe haven that they come from. You go to the clan that they all come out of, the Marjitan clan of the president of Somalia's transitional federal government, Abdullah Yusuf. You go in with 10,000 airborne troops. You surround the town. You cordon it off. You put in barbed wire. You set up perimeters. You want to distribute leaflets that then come out peacefully if you want. And then you go in. You send in the military. Not us. We're civilians. That's what our military is paid to do, to kill and to capture the enemy. And you capture them, and those who fight, they kill. And then you take the captured ones back to either Guantanamo, or if the liberals don't like that, you can give them the option of distributing the pirates in the sanctuary cities in America. You give a certain thousand to each sanctuary city according to its size, and you release them in the cities, and then you let the liberals see what it's like to live around these bloodthirsty throwbacks. That's all. New York, WOR, Rick, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael, thanks for taking my call. I'd just like to agree with you wholeheartedly. The FBI, it's not their role to perform the function of dealing with these pirates. That it should be...
No, what has the FBI and the Justice Department got to do with piracy in Somalia? Nothing!
These people understand one thing. They understand brute force. And it's not going there doing criminal investigations and bringing these people back for criminal trials. That's still...
We've done the criminal investigation. They're all criminals. They're all terrorists who are conducting these raids on ships. Now you put in the military. What do you mean investigate? What are you an investigation for?
Exactly. And
what's to investigate? They're holding 30 ships. Now you need an investigation for that?
Exactly. What would Reagan do right now if he was the president and this was going on, right?
Well, I don't think it would have gotten this far, to be honest with you. I think he would have bombed the town that they come from. He would have given them 48 hours to turn themselves in, and he would have either strafed or bombed the little village they come from.
Michael, it's criminals that the ships that pass through those lanes, and we have family friends that ride these oil rigs as engineers, and they're prohibited from having the weaponry on their ships to properly defend themselves. And that's what's criminal, that they could end this problem immediately if they could properly defend themselves against these nitwits.
There is a town called Isle, E-Y-L. When they steal the money, when they get their ransom, they go back and they're building palatial mansions, they're driving Mercedes, they're buying new suits. In other words, they're acting the way pimps would act with money. Is that correct?
Absolutely. He's a terrorist and nothing more.
That's why we call them pirate pimps on the Savage Nation. If they were taking the money and using it to feed the poor, you wouldn't be able to call them pimps necessarily. But they're living the way a pimp lives with his money. He spends it only on his own self-aggrandizement. In fact, they're even stealing grain that is being sent to Somalia for their starving masses. Do you know that?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The town in Somalia is called EYL. Look it up on a map. And if you go to the town and you read the reports in the town, you will see that this is an industry being run by criminal gangs right now. And the town is a safe haven. It's become a business. And the $30 million in ransom paid last year is more than the annual budget of the entire city of Puntland that they come from. And the fact is that these 21st century pirates are going to get fatter, bigger, stronger, and more dangerous with the money unless they're stopped right now. And there's only one way to stop them. It's not once they're on the water. If there was any strategic thinking in the Navy at this time, they would go into the town with airborne troops. That would be my suggestion, to be very serious and very frank. That's a solution. Would you in Mississippi agree or disagree about sending in airborne troops and surrounding the town that they come from?
No, not at this time, Michael. It's a little bit simpler than that. These pirates are operating out of small, fast, outboard-powered boats. They only have a range of about 50 to 75 miles offshore, and they're operating off of motherships.
Right.
You go out, you take out the motherships. They don't have any range, and all these boats have to do is stay 100 miles, 150 miles off the Somali coast, and they're safe. They've been doing this.
Well, that would take care of a good percentage of the problem that exists right now, the motherships. But I believe unless you take the fight to their homeland, to the town that they come from, you're never going to stop this piracy. You have to make them pay in their own towns.
Right. A lot of these guys have been forced into piracy by the warlords. They'll take their...
Well, that's already sympathy for the devil. I don't go there. You know, in the beginning, we were told that they were doing it because their fishing grounds were being poached, and they were doing it to protect their fishing grounds. That's no longer true. You know that.
No. When you see lawyers in London negotiating ransom, these are not locals. These guys wouldn't know how to call London to save their lives. Okay? This is organized crime. It's big business, and we don't have the will to take them out. We know where they are. We know the motherships.
Well, the motherships are certainly one stage, but the next, that would be like saying the way to end Nazism is to fight the Nazis on the battlefield in tank battles and at sea. Of course, the U.S. military did that. But at the end of the day, they had to bomb Berlin into submission in order to make sure Hitler was dead. Unless you take out the town that they come from, you're never going to end the piracy. They're not coming from all of Somalia. Not all Somalis are pirates. Okay? They're coming from a certain town called Isla. Almost all of them come from EYL.
Right. The Navy right there, right now that's over there, I've fished in the Gulf of Aden. I've been on these boats. The Navy has enough manpower over there right now to completely encircle the boats that have been held hostage, and you stop all the supplies and everything from going to them.
Well, but then they're going to kill, but they will kill the hostages and blow the ships up. You know who they are. You know that they're going to kill the hostages and start throwing them over the side of the ships, and you know that all of the quaking liberals around the world will start screaming that we did something wrong. No, I don't think that's the correct solution. That is one part of the solution. But the only solution is go right to the heartland where they come from, surround the town with airborne troops, give them leaflets, whatever, tell them they got 48 hours to turn themselves in, and if they don't, then send the troops in and kill them and capture the others. What's wrong with that idea? I don't understand it.
It's a great idea. We don't have the political leadership to do that.
Well, okay, so that's what I'm getting at, of course. Instead, Obama dealt with a very important matter today, gay marriage. After 9 days of the world burning in the Middle East, because he set the fires going and threw Coleman lighter fluid on it with Brzezinski and Carter, etc., now all of a sudden he comes out, he had a big speech now about his big issue now is gay marriage.
What they ought to do is go back, like Jimmy Carter couldn't get the hostages out of Iran, but a private businessman could get his people out of Iran when he needed to. Okay?
But again, you're negotiating with them. You're not killing or capturing them. You cannot negotiate with terrorists. History has taught us this over and over again. The reason they've gotten more bold is because we've been negotiating with them. The whole EU cannot take on pirates. How are they going to protect their people from the Islamo-fascists who are pouring in from the Southlands across their entire landscape? What good are the leaders of the... I think many of you understand that we are in a fight for the survival of Western civilization. I don't think you understand this because we have a leader who is either an appeaser. And, you know, to give him the benefit of the doubt, you could say Obama's an appeaser. He's like Neville Chamberlain. I actually think it's far worse than that, but I don't even want to go into the conspiracist side because it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter whether Obama is a stealth fan of global jihad, a global Islamic State. All that matters is he's permitting a global Islamic State to emerge. Whether by accident or on purpose doesn't matter. I don't think you understand this, most of you, going about your everyday business, as we all have to do. Meanwhile, Obama and Brzezinski and Carter and others have set the world afire. The Middle East is burning. The pirates are out of control because of weakness of the West. And Obama has nothing to say for 9 days on any of these issues. So here we face a unique time in American history, unique in the sense that we have the strongest military in the world, we still do, with the weakest commander-in-chief at the same time. So as you well know, it's all about leadership. If you have a more powerful force with a weak leader versus a less powerful force with a powerful, intelligent leader, the smaller force will always win. You look at historical battles, that's always been true. It's always been strategy, almost 100% been strategy. And I don't know anyone listening to this show who could argue that with the Middle East burning, that Obama's a great strategist, unless that's his goal, which is to set the Middle East on fire. Annette, Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation.
My opinion on Obama's ability as commander-in-chief is that he went to Harvard, not an academy, and he has no concept of history or war. And I would also bet that he sucks at chess.
Well, I don't know about that. All I know is that I hear that the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard is going to offer a new MBA in piracy studies for the captured Somali pirates. They're going to send them to the Kennedy School of Government to get an MBA in piracy studies. You know how to get a higher ransom, negotiating a better ransom for a ship and for hostages, and how to invest your money in liberal causes.
I'd also like to say that my son is a soldier serving in Afghanistan, and he is a man, as opposed to that one lady who called earlier about our men not being men.
No, it's mothers like you who are saving America. Can I please send you a gift, a copy of Trickle Up Poverty? It's all I can offer you right now, Annette.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. That's my gift to you as one of the great mothers of America. What do you want to talk about? Let's go to New York City, WOR. Mark, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Hi, Mike. I'm reminded in the 1980s when they kidnapped a couple of American assets we had in Lebanon and wound up hanging one of our military attachés. They tried the same thing with the Russians, but the Russians did exactly like you said. They went into their hometowns, they got their parents or brothers and threatened them with castrations or whatever, and none of their men got killed, but I remember one of ours got hung in a hotel room somewhere.
Well, I don't think that this is a unique concept to send in an airborne people and surround the town where the pirates are coming from. I don't see what's even so irrational about it. What is irrational about calling that?
Absolutely nothing. That's the only thing they understand.
What in the hell is the military for? It's to kill and capture the enemy. Is that not true?
Exactly.
Well, the pirates are our enemy. Kill and capture them. That's all. What are we sitting here shaking for?
The only good pirate is a dead pirate.
Or, as I say, if they give themselves up, you bring them back to a sanctuary city in America and release them in Berkeley, San Francisco, Austin, Texas. I even think, isn't New York City a sanctuary city as well?
I hope not.
Maybe Bloomberg would like a few thousand pirates for dinner. That's all. New York, WOR, Chris, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. How are you doing this evening? Basically, it comes down to we're basically neutered by the politically correct. I live in a small town. Town meetings that happen, if you're not a liberal, you can't speak your mind.
Well, I mean, people in the town hall meeting certainly spoke their mind. They threw out almost 100 so-called legislators in the last election. They're speaking up.
Well, this little town that I'm living in is full of liberals. And
yeah, oh, no. If you have no support, they'll shout you down. They'll cut your microphone off. That's the way communism works. You understand that, Chris?
That's what it comes down to.
They cut your microphone off. Communists all do that while then slap themselves on the back for being advanced progressives.
Your reference to the immune system basically there's a lymph node sitting around flooding the system with Wonder Bread cells instead of white blood cells.
Very funny. Yeah, well, I would argue that the Obama administration is releasing retroviruses into the body politic and causing an autoimmune reaction that may be fatal. Let's put it to you that way. Obama is appeasing the dictatorships, most primarily the Hitler of our time, Ahmadinejad, who so far has outmaneuvered this country at every step. Ahmadinejad has surrounded our only ally in the Middle East on all sides, Syria, Lebanon, Gaza, even Egypt. And now the Mediterranean itself by permitting Iranian warships to enter the Mediterranean. And so, therefore, Israel is now surrounded because of the either stupidity or the weakness of Obama. And Obama is letting this happen, as no other American president has ever done so. Weakened, Europe is totally weak, cannot even defend itself against the invasion that's occurring there. And the question is, what's going to happen next? This is the largest appeasement in my lifetime. I think is the largest Western appeasement since the 30s, when Hitler was appeased by one European nation after another. And the question is, we are inviting attack against this country on multiple fronts. We are playing weak to strength. We are playing weakness to their strength. The fact of the matter is, we're signaling retreat and weakness all over the globe. And the wolves and the vultures are getting ready to attack us. Obama's been silent on this for 9 straight days. How can this go on? It won't go on. It's going to get worse, not better. And so the question is, who do we turn to? Who do we turn to if the presidency itself has now been neutered or neutralized by forces we can't even understand? Who is going to step in and get the military to do its job? Admiral Mullen, the PR man? The defense secretary, Rich Gates, is going to defend us? Haven't you seen their behavior in the past? Gates, the defense secretary who permitted Nidal Hassan to do what he did by not acting sooner? The secretary of the army who did nothing after this massacre at Fort Hood? Do you know that Hassan has not yet been brought to trial? Ask yourself why. Why has Obama not brought Major Nidal Hassan to trial? Because it would be too embarrassing for his appeasement policies. That's why. I think that we have made my point anyway. I told you what my position is in all seriousness with Somalis pirates. They come from a certain town. We know the town. It's called EYL. They're bringing the money back and they're building big houses. They're buying expensive cars. They are not giving the money to the poor. Not that that would justify piracy, but there's not even an iota of an attempt to pretend that they're doing it for the poor. They're living the way rich pimps have lived throughout history. And so if the going rate for ransom payments is between $300,000 and $1.5 million, and everyone in the world knows where this town is coming from, and that it's an industry now that's run by criminal gangs, you don't go after the speedboats armed with heavy weapons, because once they seize the ship, it's too late to do anything. There are too many people involved in the piracy industry. The fact of the matter is, they're all feeding off of it, and the town that they all live in is well known. It's called EYL. Our military knows this, and yet they're doing nothing. They're appeasing the pirates, as well as appeasing the Hitler of our time. If the military is unable to take on a mission against pirates, how are they ever going to take on a mission against Iran? Can anyone answer that question? Okay. New York, John, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Michael, the punk imposter is more likely to persecute conservatives than to punish the Somali pirates. In fact, the vicious Somali criminal element in Minnesota are no better than the pirates and should be deported as soon as possible.
Well, wait, who are you talking about? The Democrats who refuse to return to work? They don't have to be deported. They can be fired and a special election held in each of their districts. That's much easier, isn't it?
Somali element living in Minneapolis that are...
Oh, the Somali element in Minneapolis. Oh, I would with all the young men who are coming becoming terrorists. I remember that. You know, we have a police chief in San Francisco, a very fine gentleman. He was a new police chief. He replaced that total incompetent Heather Fong. And one of the things he did last year was talk about the dangers of Somalis in our midst. You know, he was almost fired for that.
Well, they are...
The minute the police chief of San Francisco talked about the radicalizing of Somalis in San Francisco, he was almost fired by the PC Corps. The PC military almost fired him. And that's because their minds have been infected with liberalism. They don't even understand what they're doing anymore. Thank you for the call. That's all. Virginia Scott, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Dr. Savage, how you doing? I'd like to talk about the piracy. There's an old saying that an army of stags led by a lion is more to be feared than an army of lions led by a stag. We have all kind of lions in the service, and all they need.
Oh, I know. Yes, we do. We have killers. We have men willing to go out and kill for the nation. I understand that.
And you're right on track with hitting the town. Probably the best answer is three-pronged. You turn some frigates and destroyers loose to hit the vessels. When feasible, you take back ships. But the bottom line is warheads on foreheads is what the military does. It spent 20 years as a SEAL. Another thing, too, Doctor, back in
I like
the day,
that phrase, warheads on foreheads. That's a great one. Is that a SEAL motto?
No, it's kind of a Navy one. But back in the day,
warheads on foreheads. I like that one. That kind of works.
The U.S. Navy was formed to combat piracy. But what they had back then, because SATCOMs didn't exist, was they had authority. If they wanted to put Marines ashore, if they wanted to press an engagement, they did it. And I'll tell you, we don't need to send these people to The Hague. You round them up, you let a skipper try them on board as a vessel.
Oh, no, you send them to Hades, not to The Hague. I agree with you.
But
that's to match your warheads on foreheads. Another T-shirt would be send them to Hades, not to The Hague. That's a good one. Some T-shirt company will steal that one.
Probably. But it can be done, sir. One thing, remember Reagan was building to a 600-ship Navy. I'm not sure what they're at now, but I'm pretty sure it's below 300. If you look at the thousands...
Well, just the bare minimum that you need to have birthing clinics aboard. That's what the Obama Navy has become. The minimum number to make sure that we have sufficient ships to have birthing clinics for all of the young ladies who need to get pregnant and be cared for by the U.S. government.
Sure. But not being able to adequately patrol that water, you're right. You got to hit it.
No. Actually, I believe that the Obama Navy should save fuel and preserve the environment by not even disembarking from home ports. Because for the job they're doing, they should actually just stay in their home ports and provide safe birthing facilities for the young ladies who need to get pregnant in the Navy so they have a nice lifetime sinecure for themselves and their offspring. Well, in other words, don't even turn on the engines. Then you don't, you know, you could save tremendous amounts of money by not turning the engines on the ships, right?
You could. But if
leave the ships in the home ports. That way they can go ashore and go shopping on the government dime. Look, you know, you can only be sarcastic up to a point, but I'm sitting here in wonderment of where the U.S. Navy is. What is it for? Where's the U.S. Air Force? What is it for? What are we training these brave men for? What is the good of brave men if you have no leadership? All right, we made our point. Warheads on foreheads. Send them to Hades, not to The Hague. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Our great leader has spoken about Libya. He has stepped away from the where is he? He's not on vacation. Is he eating ribs with Michelle? He's not. I don't know if he's on vacation with his family. He's working very, very hard in the White House, I think. He has just condemned the Libya crackdown. President Obama just now condemned the outrageous crackdown. Those are his words. Outrageous on protesters. And he said he's going to work with international partners to hold Gaddafi's government accountable. Here's what our great leader has said just moments ago. The suffering and bloodshed is outrageous and it is unacceptable. So are threats and orders to shoot peaceful protesters, close quote, Obama said in his first public comments on the violence in Libya. He did not directly criticize Gaddafi. He did not back sanctions against the oil-producing North African country. He did nothing, in other words. He went on to say, we are doing everything we can to protect American citizens. It is my highest priority. So there's your answer. No threats of military action, no threats of sanctions, nothing. Not even a criticism of Gaddafi, by the way. Didn't even mention Gaddafi by name. That's the president. New York City, WOR, Diane, I'm sure you feel much better now to know that our leader has spoken.
Yes. Isn't it the president's job to protect the American people from piracy, from wars? What he has just spoken, he's doing everything that he can to protect us. Could he be more specific in what he's doing? I don't want these guys to come here. I'm a taxpayer. We're going to have to pay for their trials. You know, the American people should get off their drugs and march on Washington and demand that the president of the United States...
No, I actually have been thinking about that, what that would mean if 20, 30 million Americans did in Washington what was done in Cairo. I think it's time. I can't do it, but someone's got to organize a 30-million person march on Washington and demand that the entire leadership be resigned. Okay, how's does that work for you? We have the most incompetent, corrupt leadership in American history, and we are in great danger. We're in great danger of losing everything this country's ever held to be dear to itself. If 30 million people went to Washington, D.C. and demanded that the entire leadership be fired, we might get something. Otherwise, they're going to continue to do what they're doing. They're acting as though nothing's changed in this country.
Acting as if
who's going to lead those 30 million people?
It's not going to be me.
It's not going to be the blackboard monger. I don't think Mr. Blackboard's going to do it. Mr. Blackboard can't do it. Mr. Peanut could probably do it better than Mr. Blackboard. Maybe Michelle Bachmann could do it. Maybe Sarah Palin could do it. You know, maybe the women could save America. Certainly, I don't think any of the men have the star power to do it. I really don't. I think maybe Palin could do it because she's terrified. They're terrified of her. The left hates her. The more they hate her, the more I start to think that she's the right one, actually, to defeat Obama. The more they hate her, the more they smear her, the more I identify with her because I've been hated and smeared for 15 years now. But I don't want to go into this. Somebody needs to lead 20 million people to Washington, D.C. and demand that the entire government be dismissed for incompetence and corruption. How's that for an idea? Why not Egypt and America? Would that work for you? Because it's a peaceful thing. Jesse Jackson himself said it's peaceful, what happened in Egypt. So I'm a peace-loving man. And although Jesse Jackson is not my favorite man, he's saying that what happened in Cairo was a massive nonviolent demonstration. Apparently he didn't hear about the rapes and the murders and such because he didn't want to hear about that. It's massive nonviolence. And so we can't have a Gandhi moment in America. Who's the Gandhi is the question. Who is the Gandhi? Where does this end? I mean, let's be serious for a moment. Let's be serious again for a moment. I was joking, of course. You're never going to see 30 million people going there because it doesn't work that way in America. It's not going to happen. And the only people who could organize 30 million people would be all of the corrupt unions in America by giving the men time off and paying them to go. But they're for the corruption in the Washington, D.C., not against it, in my humble opinion. So who's going to do this? Who is going to lead us? Who's going to? What happens next? Remember, this started in where? What country? Little country. Little tiny country. Was it Tunisia? It started with the little twittering, you're told. It didn't start with twittering. It didn't start with Facebook. It was carefully planned for well over 2 years. You know, you've been told, you've been lied to again. You've been told that what happened in Egypt, for example, make the bigger picture, it was spontaneous. That's what the morons in the media would have you believe, that it was young guys in dungarees who had visited New York who went back and twittered their way to a revolution. That's a lie. They were carefully trained. They were funded and carefully trained by radical leftists in the United States of America. This was funded and it was planned for 2 years to bring down Mubarak. We have links to Soros with this. I don't care what he says. I investigated this. It's a public knowledge. It's in the media. It was Brzezinski, the same man who gave us the Ayatollah. Brzezinski again. Jimmy Carter's national security advisor was at it again. He's a longtime Israel hater. As you well know, Jimmy Carter hates Jews and hates Israel, in my opinion. Whether they intend to see Israel wiped off the map is not knowable at this time. They did this. And whether this ends sooner rather than later is anybody's guess, because this is spreading. What is going to happen if Saudi Arabia falls into the hands of the Islamists is another question. You're going to look back to the good old days of the king of Saudi Arabia? Is that what's coming because of the meddler in the White House?
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
talk about oil on the Savage Nation. You know, we hear that prices are going up at the gas station, but that's just because the cartels, meaning the gas companies in America, along with the others, don't make any mistake about it, the monopoly called gas and oil is exploiting the situation, okay? The fact of the matter is the world is afloat in oil. It takes 6 weeks for oil to get to the gasoline station, and yet they've already jacked up the prices, right? We use about 20 million barrels a day of oil, okay? And we're importing 60% of it. Now, Libya has actually very little oil compared to Saudi Arabia or the other big oil sheikdoms in the Gulf. The fact of the matter is, the millions of barrels a day from Libya, if they come off the market, the oil sheiks in the Arabian Gulf could open up the pipeline and pump much more oil. They can increase their production to replace the oil lost from Libya. So it could be an unevent, right? So therefore, most of what's going on now is all about controlling the market from afar. This is manipulating the market. In addition to that, there are millions of barrels of oil floating around in bays around the world in tankers waiting to offload into refineries that we're not hearing about. You know what I'm saying? They're keeping that hidden. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. There are many, many stories talking about Iran. Obama grapples with gay marriage while the world is burning. Rockets were fired at Israel today. And oil's at the highest price since 2008. And liberals, attention, liberals. According to a Libyan official, Al-Qaeda has set up an Islamic emirate run by a former Gitmo prisoner. Thank you, liberals. When they come to hang you, don't blame anybody but yourself. You did it. You did it, you liberal fools, you. Go to michaelsavage.com and you'll see what I'm talking about. I didn't make these stories up. Here are some other headlines. Gaddafi ordered Lockerbie. American Muslim ran over his daughter with a car because she had become too westernized. Isn't multiculturalism great? You know, that's the important thing to remember is how great multiculturalism is. Just incredible, running over daughters. Porn queen Jackie Smith blames sexism for her downfall. She's the vermin who banned me from England. That's right, Jackie Smith, and I'm still on the list. Speaking of vermin, the top lawyer for the S Security Exchange Commission and his brothers inherited $1.5 million in Madoff profits. David Becker, who was named SEC General Counsel and Senior Policy Director at the SEC less than 2 months after Madoff's arrest in December of 2008, inherited $1.5 million in profits from his mother's estate, all made from Bernie Madoff. San Francisco, very important decision. It may ban infant circumcision. Those caught cutting foreskins would face a fine of $1,000 and a year in prison. San Francisco may ban infant circumcision. That's what goes on in this city, to give you some idea why I love it so much. Now, I understand that the local song that's the most popular is I Left My Part in San Francisco. That's about to change. I Left My Part in San Francisco. I don't think you're really interested in this, really. I mean, I could play stuff that you'd be interested in. I don't think people are interested in this dry stuff, to be honest with you. I know you're not. I know you're not interested in Israel anymore. I knew that. I have a very good instinct about it. If you woke up tomorrow and read that Obama said Israel should disappear from the planet, you'd probably go about brushing your teeth and seeing who you can contact on Twitter. Or if he said we're giving Taiwan to China, you'd probably brush your teeth and go on to Twitter and see who you can go out to dinner with tonight or who you can hook up with. You know, it's not, I got to be honest with you. I know that I'm from another generation, and maybe I care too much about certain things. I'm not going to apologize for it, but I was discussing this last night with someone, and I said, don't you know that the world that we grew up in is no longer here? We grew up in a different world than the world that we're living in today. It's a different universe. Obama's not from our world. Obama's from a much more, shall I say, nihilistic, atheistic world where there's no loyalty to any nation, no loyalty to the concept of nationhood. In fact, no loyalty to the concept of decency, in my opinion. And I said many of the things we grew up on no longer exist. Duty, loyalty, honor to your own family, to yourself, starting with yourself. Do you have a duty to yourself? Do you have honor to yourself? Do you have loyalty to yourself? How about your family? How about duty, honor, and loyalty to something bigger than yourself, something beyond the family? Very little of this goes beyond anyone who's younger than 50, in my estimation. Some have it, but most don't. I think most people are living on their id. They're running on pure id fumes right now. And I don't think that the world that I live in is really the world that the general American public truthfully shares in. And I'm not apologizing for it, nor am I trying to marginalize myself. And in a way, maybe I'm trying to explain why I care about these issues that I care about. And so having said that, I still have millions of listeners because they are either from my generation or they're a little younger than me or they think the way I do or they'd like to know how I think and try to figure out who's right, me or the atheistic, nihilistic people who follow people like Obama, et cetera. I mean, I'm trying to put this in context for you. I'm feeling my way through this as I discuss it with you. And I think it's a very big discussion, which is the world I grew up in, the world I believed in, no longer exists. It wasn't all destroyed by Obama. I would say it started, the destruction of the world I live in was started by Bill Clinton. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So now let me talk a little bit about, if I can, Ernest Hemingway and his boat and his politics for a minute. So as you know, I'm a boater. I'm a power boater. And as you may not know, you will know eventually, in my new novel, Abuse of Power, my character, Jack, lives aboard a boat. He's had a divorce. His wife kept the house. That's very unusual. And he lives aboard a boat, which they had bought with some of the earnings that he had made as he was a TV journalist before he lost his job because of misquotes about him, capitalized by an evil character named Soren, who ran an evil group that's based upon real life, as you well know, where they take conservatives out of context. So anyway, he made some money, so he bought this boat, and he's living on it. So in the book, we're going to learn that Jack, when he was a little boy, where is this thing? I got to find it. At this point, now this is not the book itself. This is just a little bit I wrote to myself today. Okay, at this point, we will explain that his boat, Sea Rider, oh, I shouldn't have given that away, I did. W-R-I-G-H-T-E-R, is almost twice as big and twice as fast as his childhood hero Hemingway's Pilar. How big Pilar seemed when he read about Hemingway's exploits in the Keys and off the Cuban coast and through the Gulf Stream. Like the man himself, the boat took on epic proportions. In reality, though, Pilar was a 38-foot single-engine launch and purchased for $7,455 from Wheeler Shipyard in Brooklyn, New York in 1934. Equipped with a 70-horsepower Chrysler Crown gasoline engine, she cruised at only 8 knots and had a top speed of 16 knots. Jack's boat, the Sea Rider, was a 59-foot Aleutian, 63 feet overall. She has twin 1,000-horsepower Caterpillar marine diesels. She can run all day at 18 to 19 knots and can top 24 knots. More about it here. So that's a little bit of the background of what I'm gonna put into the book. So listen to this. You're not going to believe happenstance. And I found out something in life. When I get into these phases, happenstance happens. Whether I run into a cell phone guy who's a Muslim and I have a conversation with him and he winds up becoming a minor character in the book, which happened, or I wind up in a restaurant I normally go to and a conversation appears that's going to wind up in the book because it's perfect for a scene, or today I bicycle down and I go into Barnes & Noble, which I rarely do because I don't like bookstores in general. It's too painful for me to go into the bookstores, except with, I got to tell you, since trickle-up poverty, I tentatively go into bookstores again because I feel good about bookstores again. So I buy Power, I was going to buy another one. So I buy Power and Motor Yacht for this month, and I flip it open, I almost fall down. There is an article with a picture of Hemingway's boat, Pilar, which I had never seen. Now remember, I grew up as a young man who I idolized, Jack London's writings. I idolized Hemingway's writings and the romanticism of the boats. And the boat that he had, the Pilar, I never understood. I really didn't know how big the boat was. I thought it was something like a destroyer. It seemed like as big as a 120-foot destroyer. Remember, he used it during World War II. He used this little boat to hunt for to hunt around the Florida Keys and the Caribbean for German U-boats. So as I say, when I was a young boy, I hero worshipped Ernest Hemingway in all of his writings. I read everything he ever wrote, but I also read everything Aldous Huxley wrote. I read everything Jack London wrote. I read a lot of other writers. Henri Troyat's Tolstoy influenced me. So don't try to pigeonhole me and stereotype me if you're one of these psychopathic liberals. So I used to hero worship Hemingway, and as I say, he had a boat, Pilar. I had no idea how large it was, but I loved the adventures on the Pilar off the coast of Cuba, the Gulf Stream, the Keys, etc. And I had no idea how big it was. I go in the bookstore, open up this PMY Power Motor Yacht, and bingo, there's a picture of Pilar. It's a museum now in Cuba, because, of course, he lived in Cuba at the time. And they made a museum out of the boat. It's in the outdoors in a shed. And I see the boat. I said, wait a minute. Beautiful launch, but it's only 38 feet. And then I learned the boat was 38 feet. It was bought for $7,455 in 1934 from Wheeler Shipyard of Brooklyn, New York, which is interesting unto itself that it was built in Brooklyn, New York, which I thought was intriguing. And it came with a 70-horsepower engine, a Chrysler Crown gas engine now. It could only do 8 knots, top of 16. I doubt that it could do 16, by the way. Yeah, I know something about boats. If they say 8, this boat never hit 16. They say reportedly a top speed of 16. This boat never hit 16. I said, wow, my boat's twice as big and twice as fast. I said, and I can pilot it myself. So I said, well, Michael, you know, you got to understand that you're in another world now. It's a different world. But let's go into the politics of Hemingway for a minute. So Hemingway used the Pilar for fishing and having a good time, sport fishing. But during the war, he said he got a special license from the State Department. I want to find this exactly now. I'll get it exactly right. He got a special, here it is. Right after, a few months after America enters World War II, Hemingway obtains permission from the U.S. Embassy to take his boat Pilar on patrols along the north coast of Cuba to hunt German U-boats. And revisionist historians who hate Freud, who hate Hemingway, who hate anyone who's a masculine figure, take snide shots at him. And they say all he did was he did this to get around fuel rationing so he and his buddies could fish and drive drunk on the water while ordinary people suffered wartime shortages. That's typical left-wing rubbish, okay? Everything that's beautiful about our civilization and society, they try to destroy. So that's why you have President's Day instead of Washington and Lincoln's Day. You get it? I'm giving you another example. Hemingway was just as... And it all started, really, because his third wife, the fifth-rate war correspondent, Martha Gellhorn, after he ditched her, started to spread these stories. She derided his boat patrols as somehow unworthy while the real war raged overseas. She was a jealous woman. Nowhere near him. She used him to get ahead as a writer. And big deal, okay? So anyway, this woman, Gellhorn, Hemingway's third wife, didn't even understand the strategic situation that America was in 1942. Remember, the Japanese had just bombed Pearl Harbor. German subs were winning the battle for Europe. You didn't know this, okay? Your revisionist history told you that we were the aggressor. The leftists are now on the side of Hitler, by the way. They don't even realize where they painted themselves into a corner. Everything America did was evil to them. We were losing the war in Europe, and the fishing grounds that Hemingway used were teeming with a new pelagic species known as predatory U-boats, lying in wait for the tankers that were coming up from Venezuela and the Gulf of Mexico. And they were successful. The German U-boats were successful. In June and July of 1942, they sank 30 ships near Cuba's north coast. 30 ships, right? And by November, German U-boats had sunk 263 ships in the Caribbean Sea alone. Winston Churchill was going nuts. He wrote President Roosevelt, and he urged a more aggressive response against the German U-boats. Roosevelt said, we don't have the ships. Hemingway now hates fascism, and he was inspired by the story of how British yachtsmen had helped evacuate their defeated army of 300,000 men from the beaches of Dunkirk in June 1940. That's if you know anything about that history. So Hemingway knows that Germans often stopped any fishing boat. They stole their catch, and they stole any fresh provisions and water that fishermen had. You didn't know that about your friends, the Nazis, or your good liberals? The Germans, in other words, stopped any fishing boat in the Gulf, any fishing boat in the Caribbean at that time, stole their water, stole their food, and took aboard the submarines. You didn't know that about your good friends, the Hitler Jugend? You didn't know that about your friends who sang the Horst Wessel song, you leftist Nazis, you? So Hemingway had a plan. He was going to use his fishing boat, the Pilar, as a decoy. He would meekly allow a U-boat to come alongside and say, give us your provisions. And then he and his buddies would spray the enemy deck crew with Tommy guns and try to throw grenades and satchel charges down the sub's open hatch. It was, okay, maybe too much of an imaginary plan, but he was a great fiction writer, right? But naval history is full of successful asymmetrical deceptions, and I doubt very much, I don't doubt very much that had he really come upon a sub who pulled him over for the food, that he would have done this. But they didn't. So one of his patrols in Pilar included more than 40 days along the quays of Cuba's wild north coast. Nine men on this 38-foot boat, by the way. If you know anything about boating, nine men on a 38-foot boat for weeks on end is no one's idea of a good journey, even if there was plenty of booze, okay? So he didn't do it for the fun. He did it because he really believed in his mission. And they spotted only one submarine, but no action could be taken. And that's all I want to tell you. So there's a little reality here and a little fiction, but mostly you've come to learn something about Hemingway's boat, Pilar. If you were interested, fine. If you weren't interested, maybe you enjoyed the story anyway. It's certainly more interesting than talking about George Soros and what he's doing to the Western world that we live in, or what Obama, the accidental president, is doing.
Savage.
You know, we're talking about how Obama is totally silent about Libya and Iran and Egypt. In this book, A Time to Betray, ex-Revolutionary Guard member Reza Khalili says Iran is serious with its threats and now is the time to take action, not support this criminal regime in Iran. He joins us on the Savage Nation with his voice modulated to protect his identity. Reza Khalili, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you so much for having me on your show. It's a great pleasure and an honor to be on your show.
What do you mean by saying Iran is serious with their threats? Which threats?
Well, what I mean is that, as I've showed in my book, ever since the Islamic Revolution in Iran, the mandate has been to export the revolution into the region and to form a coalition where Israel will be destroyed and U.S. will be brought down. And that has been the slogan and the theme of coming out of Iran ever since. And I'm just puzzled and confused why the West is not still getting this message. Why don't they understand that they mean what they say?
Why do you think this administration is not taking Iran seriously?
Well, you know, I wrote an article before President Obama even started his approach towards Iran. And I warned him that neither negotiations nor sanctions will work, and I gave him the reasoning. The Iranian leaders, you see, the problem is that we have failed. The West has failed to understand and realize the philosophy of the leaders of Iran. Now, this is a radical group. These are fanatics who believe in the end of times, and we call them a secret society of Hojatiyeh. And these are the peoples who truly believe that they can facilitate the coming of the last Shiite Messiah, the 12th Imam, Imam Mahdi. And you have to look at the city of Qom, located southwest of Tehran. This is one of the most important centers of the theology to Shia Islam. It is from these theological seminaries that the country is run. And Ayatollah Misbah Yazdi, who is a member of the Assembly of Experts and also a close advisor to President Ahmadinejad, he was the founder of Haqqani School, along with the chairman of the Guardian Council, Ayatollah Jannati. So these people, and Khamenei, and even the Speaker of the Parliament, Ali Larijani, and the rest, they believe in Mahdaviyat. It's their philosophy. It's been there, and that calls for the destruction of Israel, of the West, and glorification of Allah worldwide. And you know, if it's our failure of understanding this philosophy that we keep on approaching them. President Obama approached them with open arms, sent them even a letter that he does not intend to interfere in internal matters of Iran, leaving the Iranian people alone in their aspiration for freedom. Thousands have lost their lives, as many have seen on videos coming out of Iran. So I'm puzzled. I mean, what now, Mr. President? The negotiations haven't worked, and the sanctions aren't working, and they're obtaining the nuclear bomb.
Well, where do you think it goes from here?
But you see, the White House needs to wake up. They are sending confusing signals to the radicals in the Middle East, and actually this confusion and lack of action and the show of weakness by this administration is the cause of the unrest in the Middle East. Once they smell weakness in U.S. actions, then they become much more aggressive, and they have Iranian agents have been infiltrating the Middle Eastern countries, the Persian Gulf countries, ever since the revolution, hoping to incite people in revolution and expansion of the Islamic rule in the region, as everybody is witnessing right now. And so if we remain confused, then a catastrophe is at hand, because Iran will obtain the nuclear bomb and they will use it. A mutually assured destruction will not work because they welcome martyrdom. They are not afraid to die to glorify Allah.
Well, why is the mainstream media silent on Iran?
Well, you see, that's the reason I wrote the book, to show the people. You see, I was involved in the revolution. I was in the Revolutionary Guard. Then I chose to betray them in order to save my country by becoming a CIA agent. So I feel that they need to listen now. It's very hard for the Westerners to understand such radical ideology because it does not jive with their logic. But it is true and it is there, and they have to understand it and at least report the human rights violations of this government, which is horrific. I mean, they are killing people. They are torturing and raping girls and boys before they execute them. Where is the human rights? Where is the UN? Where is our concern for the principles of humanity? At least speak of that. Support the aspirations of the Iranian people, because they are our best hope to bring change in Iran and overthrow this regime without a bullet being fired. Otherwise, it's going to be war, and it's not going to be on our terms.
How are the Iranian people themselves reacting?
Well, the Iranian people, and I have to be honest with you, Michael, the Iranian people feel betrayed by President Obama's administration, by the West, because they see how he came out in support of the uprising in Egypt when a few hundred thousand people gathered in the square. But millions of Iranians are coming out. Millions are getting risking their lives every day. And the Basijis and the Islamic thugs attack them with no mercy. And they see no support from the West. So it's puzzling to them. What is the White House looking for in negotiating with this regime, and why don't they hear the cries of the Iranian people coming out of Iran every day?
What can we, the people, do?
Well, you see, I wrote a commentary as an open letter to the new Congress. We can do a lot. We have to do it, and we owe it to humanity to do it. We owe it to future world peace to do it. It's very easy. Despise the leaders of the Iran, support the aspirations of the Iranian people. White House should take the lead right now. People should call their representatives, their senators, to put pressure on them, because this is of most importance, matter of our time. We have to provide support to the Iranian people. We have to provide support in pursuing the Iranian leaders and all the Revolutionary Guard commanders on the crimes against humanity for rape, for torturing, for murdering Iranian citizens, for genocide against religious minorities, for their involvement in international terrorism, and for killing American soldiers or heroes in Iraq and Afghanistan. Then we can establish a direct channel of communication with Iranians, help them communicate without censorship and get united, and provide support for their uprising, and show it to the Iranian regime that we're going to come after them. That would divide the loyalists. There is a huge crack right now between the leaders of Iran. We can widen that crack, and then more people will come out when they see the support from the West, and this government would collapse.
Well, do you think this administration will finally do the right thing?
Well, again, Michael, I think that they are not getting it. They have shown over and over that they are weak, they are confused, and they don't know what they are doing. Right now, it seems that they have thrown in the towel because the negotiations didn't work. Iranians even refused to talk about the nuclear issue at this recent meeting in Istanbul, Turkey, with the world leaders. And they are going full speed ahead with their enrichment and their collaboration with North Korea. And actually, North Korea is preparing for a third nuclear bomb test. And I revealed in December that Iranian scientists have been sent there and it's being financed by Iran to test a nuclear bomb in North Korea. So they're moving full speed ahead. And it seems that we've thrown in the towel. They have to stop right now and get together with our Western allies, with the European allies, ask them to cut diplomatic ties with the Iranian government to a minimum, throw out all the members of Iranian consulate embassies, those who work out of mosques, Islamic cultural centers, because I can tell you from first-hand experience, as I was working for the agency in Europe within the Islamic community, out of mosques and cultural centers and others, there is a great activity against the West. And so throw out these agents and come out and support Iranians. That's our last hope, to get rid of this barbaric regime, a messianic regime, without going to war.
Where can we read more?
Well, they can go to my website, atimetobetray.com. A Time to Betray is the title of my book, and it's about my life and how I chose to become a CIA spy and my activity and reports, and the life of Iranians, their suffering, their pain, their fear, courage, and hope. They can follow all of that and all my articles and commentaries on my website, again, atimetobetray.com.
Reza Khalili, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thank you so much, Michael, for having me, and God bless you all.
It's what I've been telling you for years. Iran is a genuine threat. The Obama administration is not protecting us. It seems things are only getting worse. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
To the show. I mean, there's a lot of disclosing and disturbing material in here about the treachery behind this story. And I was talking about the shadowy world government called the Bilderberg Group. Go ahead, laugh. Take another stoking. Smoke another joint. Keep laughing, you schmucks in Hollywood and New York who think you're so damn smart. Just remember, while you were in a comedy club, stoned out of your mind, trying to make it as a comedian, I was plodding along. I earned my PhD and I was saving rainforests. So don't lecture me. That's what I'd say right to your face, which is why you won't have me on your show, because I'd rip you apart like the cockroach that you are. And I think you know who I'm talking to here on this show, these phonies out there, these wise guys who have nothing to say unless someone writes it for them. So let me go on, if you don't mind. The Bilderberg Group is a secretive organization whose activities from its inception in 1954 remain hidden from both press and public scrutiny. While little is known about their inner workings, we do know that the Bilderberg Group is an international consortium of politically and economically powerful people who envision a new world order, with them at the top pulling the strings. They are dyed-in-the-wool pan-Leninists. Now, let me pause here. I don't care whose book you have read this last week or two. Have you seen the phrase pan-Leninist anywhere? No, you haven't. You've seen the same old Marxist, socialist, because they learned that from me 2 years ago. The blackboard people. They heard me say Marxist 2 years ago already. There were five books already on Marxism, socialism. Well, let them be a little clear about what they are. These people are pan-Leninists. They're egotists of the lowest order who want to effectively erase national boundaries and control the world economy. And, by the way, here's the shocking point. They have the connections to pull it off. After all, the Bilderberg Group isn't a bunch of average blue-collar guys working the night shift at a bowling alley. Far from it. The membership list from past attendees reads like a who's who of United States and international politics, finance, and communications. And here it comes. You're not going to want to hear it. Page 88, including former U.S. President Bill Clinton, Fox News owner and media mogul Rupert Murdoch. By the way, he came out last week in favor of illegal immigration. Remember that? And then all of a sudden, all of the puppets were in favor, all of a sudden, overnight, of illegal immigration. Well, the leprechaun's long been in favor of illegal immigrants and granting amnesty. You know that. How he gets away with it, I'll never understand. On the same list as Rupert Murdoch and Bill Clinton is George Soros, Timothy Geithner, Richard Holbrooke, EU Bank President Jean-Claude Trichet, Fed Chairman Bernd Bernanke, and U.S. Senators Chris Dodd, Dianne Feinstein, amongst others. You hear what I'm telling you? Those attending from the U.S., you want me to do this or not? Because I'm going to do it. I have names. There's a whole page of them. Those attending the Bilderberg from the U.S. in 2010 included Roger Altman, Chairman, Evercore Partners, Sonia Arison, author and policy analyst, Timothy C. Collins, Senior Managing Director and CEO of Ripplewood Holdings. You never heard of these people, right? Martin Feldstein, George Baker Professor of Economics, Harvard University. Neil Ferguson, Lawrence A. Tisch Professor of History at Harvard. William Gates, co-chair, Bill and Linda Gates Foundation, and chairman, Microsoft Corporation. Philip H. Gordon, Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs. Donald Graham, chairman and CEO of The Washington Post. I mean, they're all here. I don't have the time. I don't think you want to listen to this. But these people are the people who are the shadow government of the New World Order. They're here. They're there. Page 89, that's just a list of those who are coming from the U.S. that we know of. Many who attend choose to be anonymous and as such are not included in this list. We also know that the annual meeting of these elitists is a heavily guarded affair, complete with armed sentinels. Why the secrecy? What are these heads of states, financial tycoons, and world leaders saying and doing behind closed doors? Let's be clear. I'm not a conspiracy thrill seeker. The fact of the matter is that where there's smoke, there's fire. Once in a while, a picture of their aspirations for world control emerges. Take, for example, this statement made by Bilderberg member David Rockefeller. In his 2002 book entitled Memoirs, Rockefeller wrote this: "Some even believe we are part of a secret cabal working against the best interests of the United States, characterizing my family and me as, quote, internationalists, and of conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global political and economic structure. One world, if you will. If that's the charge, I stand guilty, and I am proud of it." Reference number nine. Reference number nine. Well, you want to read more about it? Go to Michael Savage's book, Trickle Up Poverty. Another pundit claims the Bilderberg Group's overall objective is the elimination of the middle class and the creation of a world order comprised only of rulers and servants, and using such tactics as the establishment of such instruments as green taxes, including cap-and-trade legislation, in order to control the world energy market and to subjugate the world citizens in the interest of combating the now proven fraudulent notion of man-made global warming. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? This is way beyond the comedian who's known to frequent nightclubs on Sunset Boulevard and has a show on HBO who accuses anyone who opposes this group and Obama as being a racist. It's way beyond the potheads on HBO. It's way beyond the comedians from comedy clubs around America who have been made very successful by power brokers who control the media. You understand what I'm saying to you? Now, what does all this have to do with the financial crisis that sent Wall Street reeling out of control, says Michael? Plenty. It validates the idea that the run on the American economy was ultimately a conspiracy designed to elect a leftist, globalist president of the United States. How else do you explain the actions of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton in June of 08 during the campaign when they ditched members of the press and disappeared? According to one report, during their absence, the two candidates were meeting secretly with members of the Bilderberg Group in a Northern Virginia hotel to discuss Obama's and Clinton's involvement with the group after the election. It is also reported that powerful businessman James A. Johnson, a Bilder Group member, selected Obama's running mate after the Democratic primary, which is why investigating the abuses on Wall Street is the furthest thing from Barack Obama's mind. In my opinion, Mr. Obama would rather conspire with the members of the Bilderberg Group to control the world. And what better way could Obama endear himself to this inner circle of globalists than to keep Wall Street vulnerable to outside manipulation in the future? You'll have to read the rest yourself. I'm very excited to expose this in my book. It's way past the point that I could pull the book back. I understand what danger I'm in for having written the book. But you know what? The cat is out of the bag. They printed 145,000 copies. The entire first run has been, the first order has been sold out at Barnes & Noble even before people read this expose. Tell me what's going to happen when people in America, even people who are cynical and doubt me, who's he, another right-winger out there, another talk show host? Well, I dare you to read the book and say that about me.
Savage.